Do you have that last one in place, Doris?
Yes.
Well, I think our tree is just about finished. How do you like it, Jimmy?
Good.
It does look beautiful, doesn't it? What do you like the most, Jimmy?
The star.
The star on top. Well, I like that one, too. Okay, well, I guess we're all set. And I think it's about time that you youngsters went to bed.
Oh, but Daddy, can't we just stay up a little bit longer? I want you to tell us some stories about Christmas.
Well, I think that is a good idea. And suppose we listen to some of the beautiful music of Christmas, too. Here, I'll pull up the rocker close to the tree.
Yeah.
Okay, now you two sit on my lap, and we'll begin. Good evening. This is Dick Bertel, and this is Christmas Eve, 1965. That special night when all the world gives pause to reflect on an event that occurred some 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem. The birth of a child who would change the thinking of mankind forevermore. And yet it is more than that. It is a time for goodwill among men, when love overpowers every other emotion, when family ties are strengthened, when hearts grown heavy with the years learn to sing again. Christmas Eve, toys, tinsel and tissue paper, baubles, bells and bubbling faces, excitement, anticipation, pressured preparation, and calm serenity. With me again this year to share this hour with you are my 6-year-old daughter Darcy and my 4-year-old son Jimmy. And this first portion of our program is brought to you with the compliments and good wishes of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
Daddy, you promised us a story.
All right, Darcy, in a little while. But first, some music. How does that sound, Jimmy?
Good.
Okay. Now, here is Mr. William Buds, president of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
We New Englanders are very fortunate this Christmas Eve 1965 to enjoy the original customs which have spread from our area throughout the American land. Whether we ourselves cling to the old-fashioned evergreen Christmas tree, trimmed with strung popcorn and cranberries, or decorate our homes with more modern symbolic representations of that old evergreen, it matters not. The spirit of Christmas, whatever our means of expression, raises our hopes, lifts us above the normal cares of everyday living, and brings to our lives the true meaning of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. The Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company is pleased to take part this evening in Past Recollections of Christmas.
Well, Mommy's out in the kitchen. She's busy making some pies again this year. She's probably making mincemeat pie and pumpkin pie. Which is your favorite, Darcy?
I don't know. I think, yeah, pumpkin's my favorite.
How about you, Jimmy?
Cherry.
You like cherry pie?
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you about a pie that was made, about 200 years ago for
wow.
Christmas. This was a 9-foot pie. Can you imagine a pie 9 feet wide?
It probably touched the ceiling in our house.
Oh, at least. Now, do you know what was in this pie by any chance?
Some blackbird. And some rabbits.
How did you know? You've been peeking.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. 2 bushels of flour, 20 pounds of butter, 4 geese, and 2 rabbits, some turkeys, woodcocks, and partridges.
I said bunnies. Can I peek?
You know what else was in it?
Mm-mm.
6 pigeons, 6 snipes, and 2 curlews. Can you imagine eating a 9-foot Christmas pie?
No, but I don't know how they got everything in that pie.
Well, neither do I. I'm glad we don't have pies like that today.
I am too.
Let's have some more music. This first portion of our program is being brought to you by the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
Daddy, how does Santa Claus get around the world in one night?
Well, it's a special magic he has.
What kind of magic?
Why, Christmas magic, of course.
Before Christmas.
Well, you know, I thought I'd wait until bedtime for that one, Jimmy. But you know, the story of how Clement Clark Moore wrote that poem, which he called A Visit from St. Nicholas, is just as beautiful. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
All right. It all began like this. It was a winter's night, just 143 years ago. December, and the snow pattered softly around the runners of the big black sleigh. The wind whipped around the hunched figures of two men, Dr. Clement Moore and his old Dutch handyman, Peter. Moore was tired, dead tired. He had left his house in mid-Manhattan, New York, early that afternoon to deliver Christmas presents to neighbors and friends. He had been received warmly. The visiting had been pleasant, but it was evening now, and Moore was anxious to be home. But Moore was a little uneasy about his arrival home, too. Mrs. Moore had planned a Christmas party for that evening, and Moore had rashly promised his youngsters, Margaret, Benjamin, Charles, and Mary, that he would entertain at the party with a little poem for the holiday. Moore was sorry that he had made that promise. Christmas poems were not really in his line. Dr. Moore was a scholar, a professor of Oriental languages in the General Theological Seminary of New York. Yes, scholarship was more to his taste. As for Christmas poems, well, perhaps he would have to disappoint them. Moore looked at Peter, seated beside him in the sleigh. Peter had just let out a great sneeze, and his broad face and round body shook with the effort. Peter was using an immense handkerchief to blanket his nose, which had been burned cherry red by the cold. Peter's soft beard, white with snow, bobbed as he said, "Not too long now, sir. Less than an hour and we'll be home." And then Peter gestured toward the sky and added, "A cold night, yes, but a fine one." Moore looked up. Peter was right. A full moon was out, bathing the trees and road in light. "How could I put it," thought Moore, "perhaps the moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. Not bad. Part of a poem, anyway." And with a kind of a grumpy satisfaction, Moore filed it away in his memory. He watched as Peter whistled and then shouted to the horse. The sleigh flew swiftly over the winter snow. But Moore thought, hardly fast enough. If only they could fly through the air, pulled by some strange creatures of winter. Reindeer would be wonderful. 8 strong reindeer. And then, thought Moore, Peter would spring to his sleigh, to his team, give a whistle, and away they would fly like, let's see now, like the down of a thistle. A mad dream, particularly since the sleigh seemed not to be going faster, but slower. "What's wrong, Peter?" said Moore. "Why are you stopping?" Peter jumped off the sled and called back, "It's nothing, sir. Only a moment. Part of the harness has come loose from the single tree." Moore watched as the old servant worked the strap back on the swinging bar, and as Peter crouched in the moonlight, the snow clinging to his beard, Moore had an inspiration. It seemed that Santa Claus was right there before him. In old Peter's face and figure, Moore sensed all the goodness and warmth of Christmas. And so Moore, working with Peter as his principal character, labored over his poem all the way back. When he reached home, he went into his study and put it all down in pen and ink. It was nothing, really, just a bit of doggerel. But Moore was certain the children would enjoy it that evening. Dr. Moore was right. As he read his simple poem, the eyes of each child shone like the lights of the nearby Christmas tree. But what Clement Clark Moore didn't know that night in 1822 was that his simple poem was destined for children yet unborn, children who would always listen with wide-eyed rapture whenever the opening lines were spoken. 'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. Well, Jimmy, I've been choosing the music on tonight's program. What song would you like to hear tonight?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
All right, Rudolph it is.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw
been talking about Santa Claus and all the preparations for Christmas and the gifts and so on. But do you know what Christmas really means, Darcy?
It means that we should all look back some 2,000 years ago and remember the birth of the little born Jesus.
That's right.
Daddy, could you tell me the story of Jesus in Bethlehem?
Well, you know, I think I can explain it better with music. Listen closely and you'll hear the story.
Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today. And man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. While shepherds watch their flock by night, them see a bright new shining star, them hear a choir sing, the music seem to come from afar. Now Joseph and his wife Mary come to Bethlehem that night, then find no place to born she child, not a single room was in sight. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. By and by they find a little nook in a stable all forlorn, and in a manger cold and dark, Mary's little boy was born. Long time ago in Bethlehem, so the Holy Bible say, Mary's boy child, Jesus Christ, was born on Christmas Day. Hark now, hear the angels sing, a new king born today, and man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day. Trumpets sound and angels sing, listen what they say, that man will live forevermore because of Christmas Day.
Once again, Mr. William Buds, president of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
Let us hope that the spirit of this season remains with us throughout the year, not only touching those we love here at home, but also extending to people and nations throughout the world. A very Merry Christmas to you all from the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company.
This first portion of our program has been brought to you with the good wishes of the Charter Oak Bank and Trust Company, who wish you every joy of the Christmas season and a most happy new year. Well, you know, it's time you two were in bed. It's 8:30.
But can we stay up a little bit more longer?
Well, all right, Jimmy, just for tonight. There is a special Christmas story that I want to read to you that you've never heard before about a little girl and her wish for Christmas. This portion of our program is presented by the Hartford Insurance Group. Now, inasmuch as our story is about Christmas bells, suppose we listen to one of my favorite Christmas carols, Carol of the Bells.
Hark ye the bells, sweet silver bells. Hark, the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away. Christmas is here, bringing good cheer to young and old, meek and the bold. Ring, ring, a dong, that is their song, in joyful ring, all caroling.
One seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they come, raising the sound, o'er hill and dale, telling their tale. Gaily they ring, while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here, Christmas is merry, merry Christmas.
One
seems to hear words of good cheer from everywhere, filling the air. Oh, how they pound, raising the sound, o'er hill and dale, telling their tale. Gaily they ring while people sing songs of good cheer. Christmas is here. Christmas is merry, merry Christmas. Christmas is merry, merry Christmas.
Ding dong they sound, on without end, in joyful tone, to every home. Dark how the bells, sweet silver bells, all seem to say, throw cares away.
Well, tell me, did you like that carol?
Yes, it was a beautiful carol.
Well, now, are you ready for the story?
Yes.
All right, then, let me open our big storybook here and begin. The story is called The Bells of Christmas by Hilliard Arthur Schendorf.
The day was gray, and there was a chill in the air, and thin clouds of ice crystals scudded high overhead as Carol opened the door of her house and looked down the main street of Tompkinstown. It was called Main Street because it was the only street in town. It began on the prairie and ended on the prairie. And along the street were the frame houses at either end and the stores and shops in the middle. The biggest of the stores was Squire Tompkins' General Emporium, which at the moment was alight with Christmas candles and glittering tinsel. It sold just about everything, which made many other kinds of stores unnecessary in Tompkinstown. It sold dresses and shovels and crackers and harnesses. There was just one thing, unfortunately, that it did not sell. That was Christmas bells, the kind that would really ring. Now, the squire was not an unkindly man, and when he had discovered that he had no Christmas bells, he had been genuinely sorry. There were two reasons why he did not have the bells, he had explained. One was that he had not thought of them in time to have them by Christmas. The other was that he had not known where one could obtain Christmas bells, the kind that really ring, at least. Why not, the squire had suggested, just ring the church bell on Christmas morning? We have a fine bell in the church. But Carol and all the children had shaken their heads sadly. One bell might be better than nothing, they had agreed, but one bell was not nearly enough to ring in the glory of Christmas morning. It would take lots of bells. It would take a symphony of bells, large booming ones and small tinkly ones. Well, the squire had said, I'm afraid it's just too bad. It's too late to do anything about it now. I have to wait on Mrs. Johnson over there. Why don't you children each have a licorice stick? My treat, of course. And the squire had gone off to wait on Mrs. Johnson. She wanted some flour and rice and beans. The squire was relieved because he knew Mrs. Johnson would want no Christmas bells. She was a practical woman. The children had trooped slowly out of the store. They had passed within a yard of the inviting jar of licorice sticks, but they were too unhappy even to help themselves. And as anybody knows, that means that they were unhappy indeed. Out on the street, some of the children had been all for giving up the idea of Christmas bells. After all, they reasoned, if Squire Tompkins couldn't get the bells, how could anybody else get them? But there were those among the children who were too young to recognize the impossible. And presently, the older children had wandered off to play, and Carol and three of the younger children had sat down solemnly on the lower step of the General Emporium. They could almost hear the bells, ringing bright and true come Christmas morn, so great was the excitement of their anticipation. And having heard the bells, they could not forget. Perhaps, said one of the youngsters. Maybe, said another. It could be, said the third. I will, said Carol. She was so sure that she surprised even herself. I will, she said again. And the sound of her own words pleased her. I will, I will, I will. Well, Carol was no less sure as she looked down Main Street, bleak and cold with the chill of a gathering storm. She knew she could, and she knew she would. She didn't know how, she just knew she would. She closed the front door carefully behind her. She wheeled her doll carriage down the steps, one after another, until they reached the front walk. There, she paused for a moment to take stock. In the carriage were her favorites of all possessions, her stuffed teddy bear and a bag of Grandma's cookies made in the forms of Santas and Christmas trees and bells, each with tasty icing. She whistled, and Butch came bounding around the corner of the house with the ungainly, rapturous love that only a small dog can have for a small girl. And all together, they set forth to get the Christmas bells which would ring in Tompkins Town that year. Down the walk to the street, turn right down Main Street, past the familiar homes of the neighbors. Presently, as her small legs carried her along sturdily, Carol passed fewer and fewer houses, and they were set farther and farther apart. She wondered if her small treasures would be enough to get the Christmas bells when she found them. They were great treasures to her, the teddy bear and the cookies and the doll buggy. She did not include Butch, for he was not a treasure, but her friend. She realized that the grown-ups did not always treasure teddy bears as little girls did. Still, she had a good deal of respect for the judgment of grown-ups once they got to understand, and she felt sure that whoever had Christmas bells would surely part with them when she explained how they were needed in Tompkins Town. The last house on the right on Main Street was the Marsh place. Carol knew little Biddy Marsh, a thin boy with prominent cheekbones and deep, wistful eyes. He lived alone with his grandmother, and the talk among the children was that he was poor. Certainly, the Marsh house was a ramshackle place, which even Carol recognized. She had not realized how run down it was because she did not often visit Biddy. Somehow, her mother had never encouraged her to play at the Marshes. Carol wondered what Christmas would be like for Biddy. She knew that she was getting a doll that could actually drink milk from a bottle and a new bicycle. She wondered what Biddy would be getting. At school, he was quiet and seemed to be alone a lot. When the other children were talking about Christmas and the wonderful gifts they expected, Biddy always seemed to walk away by himself. Maybe, thought Carol, maybe Biddy would not be getting anything for Christmas. And the sudden thought horrified her. Christmas without a present, surely that was impossible. Still, she wondered. And with a sudden resolution, Carol tugged the teddy bear from his snuggly blanket in the carriage. He was a fine teddy bear, hardly used except that he had somehow lost one shoe button eye. Many was the night that he had snuggled with her in bed while she waited for the cold sheets to get warm. Resolutely, she grasped the stuffed bear and walked up the narrow path to the Marsh place. Butch barked his approval. As she reached the porch and carefully deposited her Christmas surprise behind a post by the door, the first flakes of snow began to fall. The magic of winter was turning the ground from drab brown to glistening white as Carol passed the last of the houses in Tompkins Town and set out across the prairie in search of Christmas bells. The snow was falling more heavily, and it quickly erased the scars of autumn and turned the prairie into a fairyland of winter. The flakes were cold and moist against Carol's face, and they caught on her eyelashes. She bowed her head against the gathering storm. And so it was that she chanced to look at her feet, and there she had almost stepped on it, for the fast-falling flakes had begun to cover it. She paused, stooped. Yes, it was. A tiny chipmunk and its baby lay still and cold under the gathering white blanket. So close did they cling that at first she had thought there was only one little animal. Carol stooped and gently brushed away the cold snow. She saw why the chipmunk, which she knew normally could take good care of itself, lay helpless. A back leg lay grotesque and broken. The little mother was helpless to care for either herself or her baby. Carol stooped to pick up the frightened animals, which calmed under her gentle touch. It was then that she thought, the bells! Soon it would be Christmas. If she were to find the Christmas bells in time for them to ring in the town, she would have to hurry. The animals snuggled close against her, seeking warmth and protection against the storm. Their eyes were large and liquid, even pleading. Well, said Carol softly, Just for a minute, I might see if I can take care of you. She pushed her doll carriage into the lee of a large rock, where the snow did not fall so thick and had not gathered so deep, and where it was protected from the cold wind. There she placed the tiny mother and babe in the frail little carriage and wrapped them in a snug doll blanket. She took crumbs of grandmother's cookies out of the bag, and after a moment, the little mother chipmunk began to eat hungrily. Carol seated herself against the rock and considered. If she were to find the Christmas bells, she would have to set out across the prairie, and quickly. But if she took the frail little family in the carriage, they would surely die, as they would if she left them behind in the snow. She drew back the blanket, and they seemed to be sleeping now, the tiny babe against the mother's warm body. Carol replaced the blanket, and she set out. But she set out towards Tompkinstown. Her heart was heavy that there would be no Christmas bells this year, but perhaps next year. It was still snowing when Carol awakened bright and early the following morning. The house was chilly, but Father was building up the fire in the big kitchen range, and soon the comforting heat began to seep through the frame house. Carol thought first of the chipmunks, which he had left by the woodbox the night before. They were bright and cheerful looking. Then she thought of the Christmas bells, and she was sad. Butch licked her face comfortingly. And then, it couldn't be. Bells! There were Christmas bells. Somehow it was unbelievable. Carol was breathless as she ran to find her mother and father, who were putting on their warm robes and slippers to come down and open the presents. Mother, she cried. Father, we got them. The bells. Do you hear them ringing? Her parents glanced quickly at one another. Then her father drew her to him, and his voice was very gentle. Do you hear the Christmas bells? He asked, and Carol nodded. Father stroked his chin and said, I don't hear the bells. Neither does your mother. But I believe you do. They are your bells, the bells you set out to find. When you thought more of little Biddy Marsh than you did of yourself and gave away the teddy bear you love, when you thought more of the least of God's creatures and helped them when they needed it most, when you did all this, Carol, you found your bells. For giving and compassion are the true bright bells of Christmas. No, dearest, many of us do not hear your bells, but we may pray that one day the bells of Christmas may ring loud and clear for each of us all over the world.
I'm
The Hartford Insurance Group is happy to bring you this program of Christmas. It is our hope that it will give you and your family a moment of enjoyment on this wonderful night. The Hartford Insurance Group would like to wish each of you a very Merry Christmas.
Daddy, that was a beautiful story. Does Christmas mean as much to other children as it does to us?
Well, Darcy, that's the whole point of Christmas, really. You see, Christmas is for everyone, not just a special few. Do you remember last summer when we visited the World's Fair and we saw the UNICEF Pavilion? What was the song we heard there, Jimmy?
It's a forward door. It's a forward door. It's a small world after all. It's a small, small world.
Right, that's about the way it went. And what did that song mean, Darcy?
It meant everybody loved one another.
That's right. And it also meant that children are alike all over the world. You see, children are children everywhere. For instance, in Germany, children sing in a language very different from ours, but the meaning is the same. That was Silent Night. Did you recognize the song, Darcy?
Yes.
Now, in France, the children sing in another language we don't understand, but we understand the music.
Thank you.
Is that a pretty carol, Jimmy?
Yes.
Well, now, way across the Pacific Ocean, in the Philippines, the youngsters sing in yet another language we don't understand. But it's still Christmas. So you see, Darcy and Jimmy, it doesn't make any difference where you live, what language you speak, or how you look. Christmas is for all of us who believe in Jesus and the things he said. So you see,
it is a small world after all.
It's a small world after all.
And now it's time that you two are in bed so that you can dream of all those wonderful gifts Santa will leave under the tree for you tonight. Would you like to wish our listeners a Merry Christmas?
Merry Christmas to all our listeners. Merry Christmas to all of our listeners.
And on behalf of the Hartford Insurance Group, this is Dick Bertel wishing you a very Merry Christmas from our house to your house, wherever you may be.